Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 28th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a sunny 73 degrees and lovely summer day here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show CRISPR Gene Tech Interview with Harvard geneticist George Church. I was still out and about yesterday, but I had had this awesome interview with Mr. George Church that had been stored on my computer for quite a number of weeks, waiting for just the right time when I could play it for you, and yesterday happened to be that time. What was very interesting about the interview, and if you did not catch it, go back to yesterday's show that would have been the June 27th, 2016, Before the First Cup, and check it out, because when it was over, it literally gave me goosebumps on my arms. George Church, I think we're going to look at him in detail today, because I'm not sure that we ever set the stage as to who he really is, but he seems to be one of the orchestrators pulling all these strings. George Church is a part of Harvard University. He works with MIT. He works with the University of California system. He's a co-founder of the Weiss Institute. We've talked about the Weiss Institute many, many times. That is the home of the RoboBees. I mentioned that yesterday, as well as lots of other technologies, creating the mass manufacturing using origami at a very tiny level to be able to make swarms of these tiny little robots, such as RoboBees and other things. It's also where they studied swarm technologies. I believe that MIT has a lot to do with that as well, and they have been messing around with molecular machines and nanotechnology. George Church is also part of the Broad Institute, which is another combination of MIT and Harvard University working together. But here, let's take a look. So the interview we heard yesterday was titled The Augmented Human Being, A Conversation with George Church. I'm going to read the little blurb here for the interview. There are now 2,000 gene therapies where you'll take a little piece of engineered DNA, put it inside of a viral coat so that all the viral genes are gone, and you can put it in, say, a human gene, or you can have a non-viral delivery, but the most important thing is that you're delivering it either inside of a human or you're taking cells out of the human and putting the DNA in and then putting them back into the human. But you could do very powerful things like, of course, curing inherited diseases or curing infectious diseases for which there are no cure. Now, we've spent a lot of time looking at the artificial immune system. There's four different stories that we've read on that. The shape-shifting immune system that'll be able to protect the body from known and unknown pathogens by modifying itself, search and destroy. We've also talked about the meeting, the secret meeting at Harvard, and then shortly thereafter, a week later, the approval for engineering the synthetic human genome. Well, guess who was involved in that? Here, we're going to take a look. Oh, I'm out of order now. Hold on one second. Oh, Mr. George Church. Well, here, we'll start over here. So George Church, here's his Harvard page. George Church is a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School and director of personalgenomes.org, which I didn't see this yesterday, which provides the world's only open access information to human genetic, environmental, and trait data. His 1984 Harvard PhD included the first methods for direct genome sequencing, molecular multiplexing, and barcoding. Now, we've talked about the human barcode, barcoding genes, barcoding DNA, and that's been going on for a long time. To be able to identify every living gene on the planet. These led to the first genome sequences in 1994, and his innovations have contributed to nearly all next generation DNA sequencing methods and companies. I mean, he is the granddaddy. He worked with Jennifer Doudna on this CRISPR technology. He is the dude in the know. This, of course, plus his lab's work on the chip DNA synthesis, gene editing, and stem cell engineering resulted in founding additional application-based companies spanning the fields of medical diagnoses and synthetic biology, as well as therapeutics. He has also pioneered new privacy, biosafety, environmental, and biosecurity policies. He's also the director of an IARPA brain project, ding, and the National Institute of Health Center for Excellence in Genomic Sciences. And his honors include election to the NAS, which, I don't know, let's see what this is, the National Academy of Sciences, I would assume. NAS, I don't know, it doesn't say. That's what it looks like, though. As well as the Franklin Bauer Laureate for Achievement in Science. He's co-authored over 400 papers, 74 patent publications, and he's authored one book. And what's even more interesting is that one book that they kind of just offishly mentioned in the article that we looked at yesterday was titled, and I found it on Amazon, Regenesis: How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. We also found out in the Wikipedia entry we read about him yesterday that he works very closely with the Department of Energy. And the Department of Energy is the department that has produced the synthetic biology report for Congress. I want to read the little bio here on his book. I think we should all run out and buy a used copy hardcover for $2.68. Regenesis: How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. Imagine a future in which human beings have become immune to all viruses, in which bacteria can custom produce everyday items like drinking cups or generate enough electricity to end oil dependency. Guys, he is the guy that is working on helping them enslave all of biology. Building a house would entail no more work than planting a seed in the ground, and these scenarios may seem far-fetched, but pioneering geneticist George Church and science writer Ed Regis show that synthetic biology is bringing us ever closer to making such visions a reality. In Regenesis, Church and Regis explore the possibilities and the perils of emerging fields of synthetic biology and synthetic biology in which living organisms are selectively altered by modifying substantial portions of their genome, allows for the creation of entirely new species of organisms. Now, we found out also, not only is he involved in CRISPR technology with the Department of Energy, with IARPA, with the Brain Project, but he's also involved in cloning, working on the Woolly Mammoth Project, as well as a lot of other things. And, of course, the synthetic human genome and now the very first CRISPRing of humans. Back to his book synopses. Until now, nature has been the exclusive arbiter of life, death, and evolution. But with synthetic biology, we now have the potential to write our own biological future. I mean, if there was ever a horror, it is this. And of course, whose image are we writing it in? Well, seems like Mr. Church, Bill Gates, and Google are all in the game. Indeed, as Church and Regis show, it even enables us to revisit crucial points in the evolution of life and through synthetic biological techniques, choose a different path from those that nature originally took. So they're going to like alter evolution. I mean, you know, I've laughed for kind of sarcastically for quite a number of years about the day and we're going to have arms grown out of the back of our head, but I don't think that that is too far in the future anymore. Such exploits will involve more than just microbial tinkering. Full-blown genomic engineering will make possible incredible feats, from resurrecting woolly mammoths and other extinct organisms to creating mirror life forms with a molecular structure the opposite of our own. What does that mean? These technologies, far from out of control nightmares depicted in science fiction, well, that's your opinion, not mine, have the power to improve human and animal health, to increase our intelligence, enhance our memory, and of course, make you live forever. This is the billionaires' wet dream, and they are funding it all. A breathtaking look at the potential of this world-changing technology, Regenesis is nothing less than a guide to the future of life. Except that is no joke, because this guy's for real, and he's got the funding behind him. Now, let's look at a couple of the organizations he's involved with. So this personalgenomes.org, we have talked about 23andMe being a back end to Ancestry.com. Of course, Ancestry.com says, hey, give us $29.95. Actually, it's probably more like $99. Give us your DNA swab out of your cheek, and we'll tell you whether or not you were related to anybody famous. But what's happening is Ancestry.com is taking your data. They're giving it to 23andMe, who's using, and oh, I don't remember the name of the company, but it was a company that we did an expose on, who's actually doing the genomic, they have the genomic sequencing machines, very cheaply, mind you. To then, if you check that box, add you to the database, because of course, by giving up your DNA, you'll be able to help cure millions of diseases at some point in the future. Join society, be a good little citizen, and give up the secrets of your biology. But we also discover that 23andMe, the CEO of 23andMe is the former wife of Sergey Brin, the head honcho at Google. And 23andMe has also spun out a pharmaceutical division that is going to be using that DNA information to be able to produce synthetic drugs that are based on precision medicine, being able to cure you genetically. There's bazillions of dollars to be made. Well, this personalgenome.org that George Church founded, this personal genome project was founded in 2005 and is dedicated to creating a public genome health and trait data database. Sharing data, of course, is critical to scientific progress. But it has been hampered, of course, again, by traditional research practices and those pesky regulatory agencies. But our approach is to invite willing participants to step right up and give it to the machine to publicly share their personal data for the greater good. That's what it says. Yes, but what they didn't tell you is that he is using your personal data for mad science gone mad to crack all the secrets of biology. To now, where we are at a level where my dad is poking me saying, hey, Jewel, look, there's a commercial about that technology you were talking about called CRISPR, saying how it's going to cure our cancer. Well, of course it is. It's the dangling carrot, step right up and be gene edited 1.0 to see what kind of new life form we can create. Now, George Church was also the co-founder of the Weiss Institute, more formally known as the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering. And this is where they're stealing all of nature's secrets to create their Frankenstein machines. The Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering is a cross-disciplinary research institute at Harvard University, home of the RoboBees, which focuses on developing new bio-inspired materials and devices for applications in healthcare, manufacturing, robotics, energy, and sustainable architecture. The Institute has two sites. One is in the Center for Life Sciences Boston building in Boston's Longwood Medical Area, and one is on Harvard's main campus in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The Weiss Institute was launched in January of 2009 with a $125 million gift from Harvard. At the time, the largest single philanthropic gift in its history from Hans-Georg Weiss. In 2013, Hans-Georg Weiss doubled his gift to $250 million. The Institute works as an alliance among Harvard Medical School, Harvard School of Dental Medicine, Harvard School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, Harvard Faculty of Arts and Sciences. Of course, the children have to be involved because it's all for the children. The Children's Hospital of Boston, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, ding. Oh, and look at this, the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, Boston University, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Massachusetts General Hospital, Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital, Tufts University, Charité Universal Medicine in Berlin, the University of Zurich, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, ding, ding, and the University of Massachusetts Medical School. Translating technological discoveries into commercial products and therapies is an important part of this organization's mission. Now, we've talked about the 21st Century Cures Act that is on the floor of the House or the Senate. I don't remember which one. It's past the House. I believe it's on the floor of the Senate, waiting for them to bring it up for a vote, which will get rid of a lot of the regulatory agencies, the FDA, namely, in the approval process, because they are holding back life-saving technologies from those who are desperate. And they will allow those people to become guinea pigs in the machine, to become a case study that if something goes right, well, then we can profit from it. Maybe we can spin it off, this new technology that was paid for by, you know, billionaires as well as taxpayer dollars in some cases, and spin it off to a new organization, a new high-tech, scientific, medicinal-ish type company with an IPO that we can get then venture capitalists to invest in, and lots of the tech billionaires, all in the name of curing death as a disease, ultimately. Back to the Weiss Institute. The Weiss Institute's scientific operations are organized around six enabling technology platforms that focus on development of new core technologies and capabilities that will facilitate the explosion of major R&D in areas of bio-inspired engineering. Now, remember, too, this whole thing is about getting rid of the line item R&D budget for big pharma. You know, they used to have to spend millions, if not billions of dollars for research and development in order to present it to the FDA to get some sort of approval. And it typically took years to prove that it was safe to go into human trials. But by getting rid of all of these quote unquote safeguards, and we found out that those aren't really safeguards anyway, because there was a lot of butt patting and slippery palms going on. But to get rid of the three-letter agencies that are supposed to be keeping you safe, we can now accelerate the progress where technology moves into biology without any type of brakes being put on. And if things go well, well, then you'll be a case study, like I said, just like the technology companies do it now. They give it away pretty much. And if it works, then they peddle the shit out of you as a marketing shtick to be able to sell it to everybody else. Says this platform will integrate multiple faculty members, and this is the Weiss Institute, with an advanced technology team, clinical experts, and industry partners. The industry platforms are as follows. One, adaptive material technologies, and that is integrated multi-scale structures composed of biomimetic materials. So that is materials that mimic biology, and devices that dynamically adapt to their environments. So we're talking shape-shifting for energy and environmental applications, such as construction material that harness energy, heat, and water. Yeah, that sounds great. Number two, anticipatory medical and cellular devices, and we're not talking cell phones, we're talking cellular as in body. The development of controllable, and remember, it's all about control, people, and they will be able to control us to a DNA level once this gets launched in every human. Development of controllable and dynamic devices to anticipate and detect malfunctions and infections in the human body, and to be able to intervene to restore health by taking advantage of the dynamic and changing nature of human physiology, to engineer novel approaches for performance assessment, diagnosis, and therapeutic intervention. You know, some of you probably laughed when I was talking about the mirror, mirror on the wall the other day, but we are being sucked right into the Internet of Things. Every cell in your body will be a node on the Internet of Things that they will be able to monitor real time, make adjustments, and delete if necessary. You know, the interview that you heard yesterday with George Church, one of the things that caught me in that interview when I initially heard it back a month or so ago was the fact that when he was talking about CRISPR technology, being able to edit live genomes in live creatures for the very first time, one of the things that he discussed, and I mentioned this on air, but I wanted you to hear it for yourselves, was how CRISPR is a very fledgling technology. It was 2011 or 2012 when they first, quote unquote, invented it. But back in those days, CRISPR was not an editing technology where you could add things back in. They hadn't gotten there yet. CRISPR unzipped DNA. And he said CRISPR at that point was a killing machine. CRISPR would go in and unzip the DNA strands and oh, bang. We got a messed up biological organism. Thank goodness they figured out how to zip it back up again. Or even add things and then zip it back up. But remember, when CRISPR was created, it was a killing machine. So they can sell this to me all day long about how this is going to make me live forever. But mind you, once this stuff is in your body, yeah, they could be curing you all day. Or guess what? You know, they've been able now, they're working on being able to decode the little voices in your head. We talked about that the other day as part of this brain project. They've actually been able to hear your inner voice talking and have it transcribe onto paper. And the next thing they're working on is to be able to have it do a text-to-speech so it can actually speak the voices in your head. So there will be no more secrets inside your mind. And, you know, this is all I'm thinking. Once they have real-time control over you at a cellular, a molecular, a DNA level, and they can read the voices in your head. Hey, there's going to be some of us. Remember, we got good old Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Health, now over in the Life Sciences Verily division of Google, working on, you know, curing mental health issues for all of us defective humans. Once they'll be able to hear how much you can't stand what they're doing, or you start thinking revolutionary thoughts, who's to say that their little self-shifting, evolving technologies that they've stuck inside of you can't be flipped to the kill switch to just start unzipping your DNA to make you turn into a gelatinous mass on the floor? I mean, guys, I've read and watched enough sci-fi in my time to know that this is not insanity anymore. This is not fantasy. This is real science that they are messing around with. And they've cracked all these keys that makes them very, very, very dangerous people. And as we've dug in to what they've been doing to our food back since the 80s, again, back all starting at the very same time, not only were they genetically modifying foods, but they were finding out ways to genetically modify organisms. Not just foods, plants. They've moved it on to humans. They've found ways to get substances inside the body, to manipulate the cells in the body. And now this is the direct connect to be able to get inside you and make you live forever. I guess it's going to be the dangling carrot. People are going to step up again. It's the cure for cancer. And the way they're marketing this is, you know, bring Nana down because we'll fix her. Don't worry about it. If Nana starts bumping into walls or grows extra appendages, that's just a side effect. It'll go away with the next treatment. So this is very horrifying. So anyway, we've looked at two bullet points of this Weiss Institute that George Church is a co-founder of. Number one, adaptive material technologies. Number two, anticipatory medical and cellular devices. And these are the shape-shifting cells that they could put into the body. Number three, bio-inspired robotics. Ding. Developing computer algorithms and sensor actuator materials that enable robots to act collectively in response to changes in their environment, such as swarms of flying insect robots to assist dwindling bee populations. And yes, that is the home of the robo-bees. Robo-bees that can pollinate once all of our bees have died. You know, don't pay attention to the fact that maybe it's the glyphosate, according to Dr. Hubert. No. Don't worry about it, because we got these little robots, and on the Robo-Bees page, it says, you know, once they're done pollinating your crops, Mr. 21st Century GMO Farmer, we'll be able to redeploy them for surveillance. And yes, it did say that. But not only that, that they can fly in swarms, and that was a big deal. They studied bees and ants for a very long time to find out how to get that exact swarming technology. They have now deployed it in drones as well for the military. And it's a pretty horrifying thought. You know, we watch those Atlas robots and things, and we watch the drones loaded with AI one at a time. But think about a swarm of them, all with HD cameras and lasers to disintegrate us at will. Facial recognition and all your biometrics now as you're giving it up to the machine. It's a horrifying thought. All right, number four, what the Weiss Institute focuses on, synthetic biology, creating massively parallel capabilities for directed evolution of biomolecules and whole genomes for applications in cell reprogramming, drug delivery, regenerative medicine, and bioenergy. Yes, that's going to be you and me. Our children and our grandchildren, we are going to be directly evolutionized in their vision. Number five, biomimetic microsystems. This is engineering microsystem technologies that reconstitute complex human organ level functions for use in drug testing, diagnostics, and therapeutic applications. I'm wondering if this isn't the human body on the chip that they've been talking about. DARPA started that research quite a while ago, and we saw that now it's out there in the open. And last but not least, programmable nanomaterials. And this is the creation of targeted self-assembling nanotechnologies. Oh, good old Eric Drexler. For regenerative medicine and drug delivery applications. Let's get some of those self-assembling nanotechs into our body. Google's working on that as well. It is one huge, disgusting orgy of creatures that I don't even know what to call these people, but they are enslaving biology on this planet right this very moment. All right, so now another place that he co-founded was the Broad Institute. Again, this is George Church. The Broad Institute, again, is another Harvard and MIT collaboration, and they have licensed the CRISPR-Cas9 technology to a corporation titled Adidas Medicine for therapeutic applications. Adidas Medicine spun out of Harvard, and they were the ones who commercialized CRISPR, that is the splicing and dicing, zipping and unzipping of DNA. The Broad Institute, this was from December 1st of 2014. The Broad Institute, Harvard University, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Adidas Medicine, and that's the company that Jennifer Doudna is involved in as well, have now entered into a worldwide licensing agreement to grant Adidas access to the intellectual property related to certain genome editing technologies for the development of human therapeutic applications. Now, mind you, this is 2014, December, and here we are just over a year later, January of 2016. Adidas Medicine files for an IPO, and we'll take a look at that in a minute. This agreement between the Broad Institute, Harvard, MIT, and Adidas relates to technology that engineers the CRISPR-Cas9 system, a naturally occurring part of the bacterial immune system. Researchers at Harvard Medical School The Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard, the Broad Institute, MIT, the McGovern Institute for Brain Research at MIT, and the Harvard University Faculty of Arts and Sciences have optimized the CRISPR-Cas9 system to allow for insertion, replacement, and regulation of targeted genes in higher organisms with the potential to one day be used in humans. Again, we are not even just a year later, and it has gotten the rubber stamp now at the University of Pennsylvania. Funded by what? Oh, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and most recently, Sean Parker, billionaire Facebook, to start splicing and dicing people. This is beyond insane. Don't step up for this. Don't. For as tempting as it is, this is the poison apple. This technology has wide-ranging therapeutic potential and could lay the groundwork for treating diseases where the gene's expressions need to be altered or where mutation needs to be repaired. And in addition to their therapeutic implications, CRISPR-Cas9 systems enable scientists to modify genes and better understand the biology of living cells and organisms. Now, I'm going to back up again to that interview yesterday of George Church. He had also talked about gene drives. We looked at gene drives when we first started digging into Oxitec and their genetically modified mosquitoes to combat dengue and most recently Zika that they have let into the wild. And one of the things that we found out about gene drives is that it was utilizing the CRISPR system to put a genetic change into a population and then allow that genetic change to spread throughout the entire population of organism. So in the case of the mosquitoes, they were stating that one of the ways they were looking to get rid of mosquitoes that could potentially be infected with, you know, some disease that was never really a disease that no one ever really got sick from, but oh shit, global warming. Everybody's dying now. And I just saw recently there's a scientific magazine that came out over the weekend that now is questioning the one connective case between microcephaly and Zika, which we called bullshit at the very beginning. They're like, you know, you got all these cases in Colombia, and there aren't any babies with microcephaly. Just in Brazil. Oh, wait, that's where they released all those mosquitoes. Just saying. Just saying. But hey, they're allowing this mad science gone mad to be released all over the world. And mostly, they're going to target any of these quote-unquote third world nations where they can utilize the population as their guinea pigs without anyone blinking an eye. But don't you think for a moment that they don't have their sights set on the United States and other Western countries, because that's exactly what precision medicine is all about, is to suck you into the machine. All right, let's take a little look now at Adidas Medicine, and let me find. I'm going to do a progression here. So we had Adidas 2014, 2013 even. I see November 25th, 2013. Adidas Medicine to develop a new class of genome editing therapeutics. Yay. It's 2013. And we found out only in 2012 they first got this to stop being a killing machine. So 2013, we're already like spinning this out to get ready to go public, get some funding. May 22nd of 2014, the National Institute of Health comes out and says, hey, we no longer require any type of special review for gene therapy trials in the United States. No, you know what? We weren't keeping you safe. We were standing in the way of you getting the cures that you deserve. So don't worry about it. We are going to pass. We don't need to review things. We will, on a case-by-case special basis, allow our Recombatant DNA Advisory Committee at a federal level review cases if we see that it is necessary. Well, come 2016, we found out there was a secret meeting happening at Harvard just back at the end of May, talking about creating the synthetic human genome. Adidas Medicine went public in January with their IPO, and you're never going to believe who invested in it. Oh, Google Ventures and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So this is January. Fast forward, January 2016. Adidas Medicine, the drug maker, and they made gene drugs, whose backers include Bill Gates and Google Ventures, filed to become the very first publicly traded company to specialize in a new technology to edit flaws in human genes. And I mean, Church said yesterday, it's not just humans. They can edit any life form on the planet now. He said it's not a problem. The company, which uses a gene editing technique called CRISPR, filed in January for the IPO with an initial size of $100 million, and that is just a placeholder amount used to calculate the fees. Gene editing startups have drawn more than $1 billion in private venture capital investments since 2013, with investors hopeful that the new, more precise DNA editing capabilities will yield treatments for conditions such as diverse blood disorders, cancers, autoimmune disorders, and inherited eye disorders. Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Adidas has raised $163 million from the selling of preferred stock and venture capital firms Flagship Ventures and Polaris Partners. Each hold more than 15% of the company before the offering. And then Google Ventures, which is a unit of Alphabet, has also bought private shares along with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Coleslaw Ventures, which I don't know them, K-H-O-S-L-A. So now, that was January of 2016. We have in May of 2016, Harvard's secret meeting to discuss plans for creating the synthetic human genome. Back in May, 130 scientists, entrepreneurs, and policy leaders held an invitation-only closed-door meeting at Harvard University to discuss an ambitious plan to create the synthetic human genome. And now, after a flurry of criticism over the secrecy of the effort, the participants have published their data declaring that they are launching a project to radically reduce the cost of synthesizing genomes, a potentially revolutionary development in biotechnology that could enable technicians to grow human organs for transplantation. And we found out back a few months ago about the xenotransplantation that they're working on, growing human organs in pigs. That was something we found out from MIT Technology Review. I don't remember which university that was happening at. I believe it was either Harvard or MIT. I know that they're doing some funky stuff also down in the University of California University system with animal-human hybrids and messing with cows. This announcement of creating the synthetic human genome is the latest sign that biotechnology is going through a rapidly advancing but ethically fraught period. And remember, we're going to take a look. The University of Pennsylvania, the announcement of this first treatment that they are going to be experimenting with. We discovered that the president of the University of Pennsylvania happens to be an appointee to the Board of Ethics by Obama at a federal level. Well, the ethics have been stomped on because there are none anymore at all. Biology has now become the tinker toy of psychopaths. Scientists have been honing their techniques for manipulating the complex molecules that serve as the code of life on the planet. And this same issue of the Journal of Science that this was published in reports that there is a breakthrough in editing RNA, a molecule that is a close cousin of DNA. And yeah, we never got to that story. They also discovered a way to start editing the cells that go into the brain. And there was the brain would actually reject that anytime they tried. Now they found a way to Trojan horse it and edit the cells in the brain and put them back in. And it makes a lot of sense now knowing that all these same lunatics are part of the Brain Project. The promoters of the synthetic genome envision a project that would eventually be on the same scale as the Human Genome Project of the 1990s. Just like Obama said, precision medicine is going to fuel our economy for the 21st century, which led to the sequencing of the first human genomes. The differences this time would be that instead of reading genetic code and barcoding them, which is what sequencing does, the scientists would now be writing them. And this they have dubbed as the Genome Project Write. The goal of this project is to reduce the cost of engineering and testing of large genomes, including a human genome, in cell lines more than 1,000-fold within the next 10 years. Well, they already jumped over that. While developing new technologies in an ethical framework for genome scale engineering, so making new living creatures, as well as transformative medical applications, the group wrote in a draft. The project will be administered by a non-for-profit called the Center of Excellence for Engineering Biology, and I'd like to see who is involved in that. I'll guarantee you Mr. George Church is in there somewhere, and I don't know if in this story, oh yes, here we go, it does talk about that. The plan drew negative responses from the head of the National Institute of Health, which is pretty surprising. Francis Collins, who had led the earlier Human Genome Project, and in a statement released by the National Institute of Health, Collins said that it was premature to be launching such an initiative, and that is creating a synthetic human genome. The National Institute of Health has not considered the time to be right for funding a large-scale project-oriented HGP right effort of the human genome, as is framed in the science article. He added that there are only limited ethical concerns about synthesizing segments of DNA for laboratory experiments, but the whole genome, whole organism synthesis projects extend far beyond our current scientific capabilities and immediately raise numerous ethical and philosophical red flags. Well, bravo for 5 seconds of sense, Mr. Collins of the National Institute of Health. But of course, nobody is talking about creating human beings from scratch. No. One application of cheaper genome synthesis, according to geneticist George Church, one of the authors of the science article and one of the organizers of the secret meeting at Harvard to create the synthetic genome, would be to create cells that are resistant to viruses. And yeah, this is that shape-shifting immune system. These would not be cells used directly in human therapies, he says, but rather in cell lines grown by the pharmaceutical industry for developing drugs like, oh, what? Genetically modified tobacco and lettuce to produce antibodies like they're working at the University of Pennsylvania. Such processes are vulnerable now to viral contamination. But if you're manufacturing human therapeutics in mammalian cells, you will get contamination. So, you know, all these vaccines that we put into our children today that use things such as bovine serum, apparently, according to Church, who's one of the lead geneticists in the world, contaminate us. Oh, but you know what? Keep lining up for those shots that are going to make your child healthy. It says it can blow you away for at least 2 years, which has actually happened from mammalian cell contamination. The science paper gives a number of examples of what could emerge from cheaper synthesized genomes, such as growing transplantable human organs, engineering immunity to viruses and cell lines via genome-wide recoding, engineering cancer resistance into new therapeutic cell lines, accelerating higher productivity and cost-efficient vaccines and pharmaceutical development using human cells and organoids. The synthetic genome plan emerged from 2 closed-door meetings, one in New York City last year, which I must have missed it, and then the second one on May 10th in Harvard. But the latter drew criticism from researchers who objected to the closed-door nature of the event. Organizers said, of course, they didn't want to publicize their idea in advance of their publication. Drew Endy, an associate professor of bioengineering at Stanford, wrote on Twitter, if you need secrecy to discuss your proposed research, that of synthesizing a human genome, then you are doing something wrong. And Endy and Lori Zoloth, a professor of medical ethics and humanities at Northwestern University, published an essay in which they said that although this technology does have promising applications, it is easy to make up far stranger uses of human genome synthesis capabilities. And that's exactly the point, guys. You know, I don't trust any of these lunatics in charge. And once they have been able to capture all the secrets of biology and how to splice and dice them and make it anything they want, how to push a button and eliminate you in an instant. Don't put it past them that they are not going to use this against those of us who aren't going along with the plan. You know, going back to the gene drive where I mentioned Oxitec and the mosquitoes, Church talked about that in the interview yesterday, how they now have the capability with utilizing CRISPR in a gene drive technology to pass an entire mutation that they've created, or a new gene, or a new genetic DNA vaccine shape-shifting immunity, or whatever they want to do, throughout an entire population, whether it be human, animal, or insect, or plant. All right, back to the story. Endy renewed his criticism, and he said that the group is proceeding without the approval of the broader scientific community or without any type of independent ethical review. Do we wish to be operating in a world where people are capable of organizing themselves to make human genomes? Shouldn't we pause and reflect on that question before we launch into it? Well, yeah, you'd think so. They're talking about making real the capacity to make the thing that defines humanity, and that is the human genome. And these people will be able to mutate humans forever down the line of evolution. Remember, we read about the goals of the Weiss Institute of Bio-Inspired Engineering. It is for directed evolution. This project, the synthetic human genome, has four lead organizers. Number one is Mr. Church, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School. Number two is Jeff Boak, director of the Institute of Systems Genetics at NYU Langone Medical Center. Number three, Andrew Hassel, researcher with the publicly traded company Autodesk. Yes, and remember, they were the ones who provided the first round of funding for the Human Genome Project. And number four, Nancy J. Kelly, formerly executive director of the New York Genome Center. This news release stated that Kelly will be the top executive for this project and that Autodesk has committed $250,000 in funding for the planning efforts. Organizers hope to raise another $100 million by the end of this year with an eventual goal of $3 billion toward this effort. And the authors of the Science article wrote that some portion of this money would be raised for the project and should be directed toward addressing, of course, the legal, ethical, and social issues surrounding how this new genetic engineering technology will be used. Church, informed of Endy's latest comments about the lack of ethics, said that the nine participants in the Harvard meeting were experts on ethical, legal, and social implications of this technology, and he says that he expects many more will reply to the article once it is published. And even when we identify something that we do not want, we need to think deeply about how to prevent it. Doing effective surveillance. So anybody that's been genetically modified, we need to surveil you 24/7, deterrence and the consequences. Church, whose laboratory at the Harvard Medical School is renowned for breakthroughs in genetic engineering, says that in a span of 3 to 10 years, it should be possible to bring down the cost of synthesizing long stretches of DNA by 1,000-fold. And that would mirror the huge declines of cost in the sequencing, that is, reading human genomes. And, you know, we looked a long time ago at that tech. I don't know if he was a rich kid or not, but he had started that company called Cambrian Genomics in California. He then ended up dead somehow. I never found out how, though. But he was laser printing, 3D laser printing DNA. And his big thing was to democratize the creation of life. He was going to allow people for, you know, $1,000 or whatever to create their own life forms out of his database of genomic sequences. So I don't think it's 3 to 10 years from now. I think that that technology is already being tinkered with in a back room somewhere. Church said that researchers are already synthesizing stretches of genetic code, but only in small little pieces. Don't worry about it. The obstacle to widespread application and testing a synthetic genome is the cost, he said. But now when you have every tech billionaire on the planet involved, you know, $1 billion, $1 million, doesn't really matter. So here we go. This is 3 weeks after this meeting at Harvard. Federal panel approves the first use of CRISPR gene editing technology in humans. Wow, that was quick. A federal biosafety and ethics panel on Tuesday. Oh, a week ago, last week Tuesday, approved the very first study in patients of the genome editing technology CRISPR-Cas9 in an experiment that would use CRISPR at the University of Pennsylvania, funded by first round Sean Parker, billionaire Facebook, to create genetically altered immune cells to attack three kinds of cancer. It has widely been expected that the first use in humans of CRISPR would be in 2017 with a clinical trial by Adidas Medicine, which of course their funding is by none other two of the organizations, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as well as Google Ventures. And then we found out that the University of Pennsylvania and their gene editing technology also got funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But we had found out that CRISPR, Adidas said it would be 2017 for a genetic eye disorder that forms blindness called Leber congenital amaurosis. But guess what? They are way faster tracking than that. Only a few hundred people in the U.S. have that disease. And the possibility that a study sicking CRISPR on the cancer will happen to be the first that suggests that this revolutionary gene editing technology might be used against common diseases sooner than once thought. This experiment on humans proposed by scientists at the University of Pennsylvania, yes, that same university where the president is on Obama's board on ethics for bioengineering, still needs the approval of the medical centers where it will be conducted. Well, we just read a whole list of them that are involved with the Weiss Institute and the Broad Institute, so I'm sure that won't be a problem. As well as from the Food and Drug Administration, which I'm sure if they slip them enough cash, that won't be a problem either, which oversees the use of experimental treatments in people. If the study gets these okays, then it would enroll patients with multiple myeloma, melanoma, and sarcoma, and will be funded by the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy, which was launched this year by Facebook tech mogul Sean Parker. And what's even more interesting, and I mentioned this before, the fact that they're working on curing sarcomas, which the University of Pennsylvania was the one that spearheaded the initial studies back in the late 80s, early 90s on vaccine-induced sarcomas in cats. Just remember that. So they've been studying sarcoma adjuvants. In that case, it was an aluminum adjuvant. The cause of sarcoma in animals. They've been researching sarcomas for a long time down there. So let's find a way using more mad science to reverse it. Members of the committee were almost unanimously enthusiastic about this proposal. Dr. Michael Atkins, an oncologist at Georgetown University School of Medicine, called it, quote, a really exciting first in human study that added that we'll learn a lot, he says, from the work that could hopefully form a basis for new cancer therapies. Yeah, but this is in humans, people. Biochemist Paula Cannon of the University of Southern California called it innovative and said that the Penn scientists had adequately addressed the questions that she had about the safety of the procedure, including how they would tell whether CRISPR accidentally cuts the wrong genes. Whoops. In a problem called off-target effects. And I want to look at that, though. I don't know if we're going to have time today, but I have a story about CRISPRing humans. What could go wrong? The proposed early-stage trial will be 15 patients who will be gauging the safety of this experimental therapy to see how feasible it is to manufacture genetically engineered and CRISPRed T-cells. And we talked about this. They're going to suck T-cells out of the human. Then they're going to genetically modify the T cells, and those are your cells used for immunity. And then they're going to put them back into these people, and they're going to physically flip the switch off that regulates the T cell production So they're going to overwhelm the cancer. But in one of these stories, they had said, yeah, you know, that's great. They're going to go completely awry and produce tons and tons of T cells. And hopefully they don't attack the body. But hey, it's experimental. So don't worry about it because shit could go wrong still. But hey, we're getting to experiment on humans. And they are people with cancers that have no cure. So don't worry. We'll let you know what happens. One committee member expressed concern about the financial conflicts of interest. Of course, because there are bazillions of dollars to make, and whether or not these studies are going to be reported accurately with their results. And while this technology shows promise, the researchers acknowledge that it is still an experimental treatment and it's not guaranteed to work. Our previous efforts have been hampered because the infused T cells become exhausted and either die or cease to function. Again, we also have the Pandora's box about potentially genetically modifying children. We talked about that. They already said that they could CRISPR embryos in a petri dish, but they can't grow beyond a few weeks. So, you know, Johnny isn't going to get new superpowers just yet, but they already approved also CRISPRing humans in the UK and China. I'd be worried about China more than any place else at the moment. Because China's got that whole cloning facility to pump out a million cows or humans in a year as well. Very frightening, brave new world people. And this is something that I don't think our children are ready for, let alone our grandchildren. This is going to become the norm. Step right up, go to your doctor, get some gene therapy, be bagged and tagged, buy your DNA, and surveilled 24/7 so we can manipulate and make your evolution better in our own vision. All right, guys, well, if you can even believe it, that was a full hour. It went really fast. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Clevin Blanch is live up next, and it is Tuesday. Lots of live radio. There's a brand new show, The Barbarian Lounge, at 8 p.m. before primer time tonight with Alan Otison. All kinds of live radio, 7 p.m. Eastern. Ron, game on, 8 primer time. Alan will be guest and answer media with Esther Gibson, 11.
My name is S.M. Gibson.